Welcome to Thinking Outside the Box with Gavin Rubinstein. Conversations between Gavin and the people he believes have trailblazed by thinking outside the box in their field, industry, or even just in his office.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have a real estate queen in the building, Miss Astrid Jorda of Ray White, Surrey Hills.
Surrey Hills, Erskineville, yeah.
Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me, Gavin.
How you doing, man?
I'm good. It's been, I feel like it has been so long since we've actually sat down
and had a conversation. Yeah. No, it has been. I mean, we've known each other a long time.
About 16 years.
And so let's not do the maths on that because we know.
No, never.
We know I'm getting old and not younger like everyone else.
If you are, I am. So
we go way back, but I mean, neither of us were in real estate at that time.
No.
If I remember correctly, I actually offered you your first job in real estate.
You did.
Which you turned down. It was before I hired Remy, right?
Yeah.
We really do go back. Everything happens for a reason and it's great to see you shining in your own right. Tell me a bit about how you got started and where you're at today.
I just returned from living overseas. I really didn't know what I wanted to do. Like I had this business degree, which I wasn't really planning on using because I was planning on going and living overseas and starting a new future there. And so
you got a degree.
I do have a degree.
It's one of the only ones on this podcast. Amazing.
Bachelor of Business from UTS, majored in marketing, PR. I knew I wanted to do something along those lines. So anyway, so when I came back to Sydney, what do I want to do? And I didn't put the pressure on myself of deciding on something that was going to be my long-term career, but I did want to do something that was going to lead into a career and not just a job. I started doing sales and events at a restaurant group down at Darling Harbour. That's when I realized I had a passion for selling because one of the things that we were given was incentives. So around Christmas time, how many functions could you book? Could you upsell? When we started booking these functions, another thing I realized I loved doing was building relationships, realizing I could build rapport with someone quite quickly and make them feel quite comfortable. And that wasn't putting anything on. That was just genuinely I wanted to make a connection with someone. And when that happened, people would just take my advice. I think you should do X, Y, and Z. I think that would be really good. And they're like, okay, yeah. And it was that trust. And I wasn't pushing for anything. I wasn't trying. And I was just being me. That was when I'm like, okay, I really enjoy doing this. And then when you came and you offered me that position, one of the things in the back of my mind was, okay, well, do I still get to do something of the flavor I'm doing right now? You were pretty honest with me and you said at the time you were looking for an EA.
And
that was, you know, no disrespect to you. Like I was really appreciated that level of honesty. And I just said, thank you. I would love to, but I want to go in another direction with my career and with what I do in my life.
That is exactly what happened. There's huge power in that. Wow. Did I promise you the world or?
No. You were very straight up. You did say that you'd given it some thought. I was flattered by you. You said, okay, well, I think you'd be great for the role. And maybe I would have been.
Sure.
No regrets with the decision I made at all. I mean, it's one of those things that I look back on and go, what would have happened? That idea of being in real estate after speaking to you, stuck in my head and it never went away.
I love that. So I was somewhat a small part of the catalyst here.
Small to medium.
So from there, what happened, right? You said kind of got wet my appetite. I like this idea. I want to delve deeper.
Yeah.
What happened?
So from there, I had to take it into my own hands. Don't get me wrong. From the time we had that conversation, it was an immediate exit from events.
Yep.
It was, I give things a lot of thought, but once I've made my mind up, that's it. I was doing this role probably for about, I'm going to say a year and a half. And I think you'd come to me about 6 or 8 months in. Then I'm like, okay, this is actually something I want to do. I've got to make the move. So I started pulling the feelers out, speaking to recruiters. It's really difficult to get a foot in the door in real estate unless you've actually worked in real estate.
Very.
I did auctioneer's assistant with Andrew Cooley.
Yeah.
And then I also did open homes on a Saturday with Alex Phillips.
You got some experience under your belt.
Absolutely.
That's key. And you're 100% right because unless most of the time, we're speaking in general, you have some sort of experience. If they're a high-level practitioner, they're not going to want to spend the time, effort, and energy training you. They don't have it.
I did it in my spare time. And then I got given an incredible opportunity at Dye Jones. So I was lucky enough to work for two incredible women at Dye Jones, Bridget Barker, who was head of property management at the time. So I started off in leasing. The role was actually given to me by Carly Walsh. Carly Walsh was the general manager at the time. Both took me under their wing. I was honored to be trained up by Bridget and I was given a lot of opportunities there. Made it very, very clear what my expectations were. I wanted to be in sales.
Yep.
And they gave me a time frame of about a year. After 6 months, they said, okay, an opportunity's come up to manage Gary Sands and Jane Schumann's team. I transitioned from that role into being an associate. Realized a couple of things. I love the East. I grew up there, but I was finding it difficult to connect with a lot of people. And Jane and Gary's clients, they're long-term clients of theirs. So yeah. They'd always call them. I didn't really feel like I was getting to a lot of the forward-facing client stuff, which is what I wanted to do.
Why didn't you think you connected well?
I think it was twofold. It was one, that I wasn't put in front of a lot of clients. I was kind of in the office a lot. I was running their day and running their calendar, which I was, you know, I loved doing. It was a huge amount of experience. The age of the clientele that they were dealing with was a little bit older. You know, I take quite great pride in the fact that I feel like I can connect with anyone, but I just felt there was a little bit of a disconnect with their clientele.
How old were you at this time?
I was 24. I went to the, I'm sure you know, Bridget Collis. She was working in recruitment at the time, another incredible woman in real estate. And I said, I need something else. And that's when she put me in front of the very up and coming, very young Erkinus and his colleague, Sean Stoker, his business partner, Sean Stoker.
Yes.
Who I still work with to this day.
How long has that been?
Started with them in September of 2016.
Wow, 7 years.
Yeah. They're my work family.
And you started as Erkin's PA, right?
Erkin's associate.
So sales associate.
Sales associate. Gotcha. Yep. So that was the role, was to be a sales associate. He already had a PA. Yep. He already had an executive assistant. He already had someone running his day-to-day. He wanted someone to get on the phones.
Get stuck in, get in the deals.
Get stuck in, absolutely.
Get in the prospecting side of it.
Absolutely. And he backed me from day one. He had me on the door at open homes. He took me along with all his appointments. One of the differences between the role I was in before is they needed someone in the office, not so much client facing, you know, organizing their day, which that's what the role was. That's what they needed.
Sure.
Erkin brought me along to everything, appraisals, yes, listing appointments. I can pretty much say, I'd say majority of what I know now is as an outcome of working with him. So he's fantastic at what he does. So yeah, I've been working with him for that long. And since then, you know, people have come and left the office, but it's a fantastic group of people. I'm very lucky.
What's the dynamic between you and him now? Do you still do deals together?
Absolutely. I am a listing agent within the team.
Yep.
But I still run his listings and help him out with his listings as well.
So you still do everything in unison together.
Absolutely. Love so that. It's more along the lines of, and this is where I kind of, you know, every role or every associate has a little bit of a different role. So I'm now a senior agent in his team. I'm his 2IC. If he can't do something, I can pretty much step in and do whatever he would do. He has his clients. I list and sell my own properties. So we now have a junior called Antoine. So Antoine's me when I first started.
Yeah.
But a lot of the time, we're ships in the night. I can do what I need to do 95% of it without him.
It's like an unspoken language, right?
Yeah.
Top lesson you learned from him. And I know that's hard, but like first thing that comes to mind in terms of working with a guy like that, and he's a great operator.
Yeah. One lesson I think that I really kind of, it sticks in my head, is always be kind and always be humble. And even when you lose business, in the industry I work in, the market I work in the inner west, it's not often that if someone loses a listing, they send angry emails or they get upset with a vendor, but it does happen. And Erkin always told me from day one, he's like, if you don't get the business, say thank you, have an incredible campaign. I wish you all the best. Even check in with them, not in that capacity, but check in with them afterwards. How, you know, congratulations, went really well. Because if that listing doesn't sell, who do you think they're going to call? And that's happened. People have realized they've made a mistake 2 weeks into a campaign and they're like, you know, I don't think this is going to sell. Can you please look after the business? And so just kindness and humble and always come from a place of abundance. Like if there were not that listing, there'll be another one. So keeping the energy as neutral as possible. Don't stay too long on the highs and don't stay too long on the lows.
Yeah,
that's
gold.
A big one. Yeah.
What if you got a client who like leads you down the garden path? Like I'm talking wastes the hell out of your time, like almost on a disrespectful level, makes promises and just at the last second, because of whatever reason, whether it was 0.5% of a comm or $2,000 on a marketing campaign, has given it to one of your competitors. Are you still nice like that? Like if they've gone against what they've said they're going to do in a cowardly way, because we know that, you know, that happens to everybody. Are you still best of luck, all the best?
You just keep it civil. Wow. Just keep it kind. And also,
lesson for everyone, that is, yeah?
Don't be afraid to hand back the keys.
Yeah.
And that's another thing is Erkin, because the industry, the market that I'm in, it is a bit high stock. So
turnover. Like how many opens you got this Saturday?
Oh, we'd have about 8.
Yeah.
8 to 10.
That kind of, that'd be low for you guys, right? That'd usually
at
be
at the moment,
tight.
Stock is a little bit low at the moment.
Right.
But we are building up some Saturdays where we have, you know, as an office, we might have 25 open homes. We're bouncing between, we always try and have two people at each open home because obviously that's to provide a good level of service and to be able to prospect while you're actually at the open home. We're bouncing around.
Yeah.
And so I need to be able to gets somewhere and then Erkan leaves or Antoine sets up a property for me and then I arrive. So we get it pretty seamless.
When was the last time you came back to Keys?
Last quarter of last year. I was saying this is where the price feedback is coming in. I presented them with offers and I said, you know, we obviously we had an expectation or a desire and we were aligned on that of what we wanted to achieve. From the feedback we've been getting, the offers we're getting and how long we've had the campaign on the property on the market, the money is not there essentially. Yep. What do you want to do? Oh, we want to keep trying. The money isn't there. And it's frustrating as an agent because you almost feel like, have I left anything on the ground?
You've done everything you can.
Is there something else I could have done? On that note, I had an auction last year and I knew that it wasn't going exactly how I wanted. So I did two more open homes during the week and I met the buyer who bought it at auction that way. So you do really do everything you can, but they just, no, I want this price.
And you gave back the keys?
And I said, okay, well, I don't think we're aligned here. Respectfully, I said it's been an absolute joy looking after you and I'm always here if you need anything. I feel like another agent might be a better fit for you.
How over price percentage terms were they?
I would say at least 15, 20. So they wanted between 1 and 1.1 and it was a two-bedroom apartment in Erskineville and a couple of variables meant that the price feedback wasn't coming in at that level. It was probably close to 9, 8.50 to 9.
Okay, cool.
So we weren't that far away. Erkan's always said to me as well, deals get done when there's a little bit of flexibility from the buyer and there's a little bit of flexibility from the owner.
Yeah.
And in this instance, there was no flexibility.
Some personalities just don't get flexibility.
No.
You sound like a consummate professional. Super impressive. Like, you know, I can learn. I mean, we can learn from everybody, but just hearing that is really, it makes me, I don't want to say proud because I'm not in a position to be proud, but I mean, it's super great to hear.
Thank you.
I've got a question. I'm yet to find the answer. And I ask a few people, why is it that there are so few female powerhouses in real estate? Particularly in Australia, even more so in Sydney, right? And then when you look at, say, London or you look at
LA,
America, New York, LA, like women run the world. Do you know what I'm saying? And you look here, it's just male dominated.
Big gap.
There's so few females who are, you know, operating at a high level who are doing what you're doing. Why? What is the reason?
So I'm a part of Leading Ladies in Real Estate, which is actually a Ray-wide initiative.
Bridget and Natalie Ward.
Natalie
and Shanib all spoken about.
Yeah, it's an incredible initiative. If you're a woman in real estate, please reach out and can give you details. We have some really, really great events. That brings a lot of women together. But one of the things that Bridget and Natalie Hortz all say is you can't be what you can't see. I remember when I started in real estate, the only women I knew or could look up to were, you know, people like Jane or people who've been in the industry. Like I couldn't rattle off names, but they'd been in the industry for many, many years. All I saw was the boys. I guess the benefit to that is you develop a bit of a thick skin and you know how to hustle. But
Sure. Yeah,
there were no women that I could actually look up to that were close to my age. That
like
I could
the up and comers, like I can give you a list of 20 young male names between 20 and 25 who in 10 years from now are going to be flying.
Next chairman's elite.
I can't give you three young females. Like where are the 20-year-old females? In fact, if you are listening, you live in the East, you've got a passion for property, people and being a deal maker, you give me a call because I will invest in you. I mean, my theory around it is I had a great, great girl who worked with me 2 years ago. She had such promise. She was going to be great, but the pressure cracked her. I don't think that's a male-female thing. I think that's a personality thing, right? And then I just don't think enough of them lead by example. So not enough of them are in there setting example and creating this, you know, exciting aspirational side of being a female real estate agent. So I think there's such a huge gap. How do you compete with a male-dominated industry?
I'd say maybe 5 years ago, it was that I looked young, too young. I'm in my mid-30s now, and I think there's a level of confidence that comes with life experience, work experience. I'll admit, I'm not someone to throw myself in the deep end. And, you know, this is where I give props to Erkan because he would throw me in the deep end. I signed up my first property because he didn't show up. He knew what he was doing. He knows when I'm ready before I'm ready. He did at that time. So he let me go in the deep end and I swam. It was tricky. I didn't have I think there was one other woman working in the office at the same time as me. But when it comes to going up against your original question, going up against male agents, I'm myself. I'm empathetic. I'm compassionate. I did exactly what I did. I don't try and be anything else than what I am. When I was working in sales and events, building that rapport very quickly and just coming at it from an emotional perspective. Like, I can understand what this is like for you and how it might feel like this. You know, use the word feel a lot. I mean, there's the science of kind of words you use and the art of language when you're actually pitching to certain people and positioning your pitch depending on who the person is. One of the key markets that I look after is first home buyers and first time sellers, and they are between their mid-20s and mid-30s. So these are people
nervous
that I can,
Nellies,
you know,
and pedantic nervous Nellies.
Really, they are. And yeah, one of the things I take great pride in and I thoroughly enjoy is looking after them and holding their hand through the process, not in a patronizing way, because, you know, it's a big thing to buy a property and to get into the housing market.
It's nuts.
It's crazy and it's incredibly competitive. And my goal at the start of every campaign is to have both buyer and seller as happy as each other when they walk away.
That's a tough order.
Massively. And what it comes down to is communication. If a buyer calls me at 7:30 at night, you answer the phone. If they need some information, you provide it to them readily. Even if you think, oh, that might hinder the campaign, send them the strata report, send them the information they're looking for. In the week before the auction, as you know, we're an auction business, and I'd say 95% of what I run goes to auction. In the final week of the campaign, I'm calling them almost every day. Do you have everything you need? Are you okay? Is your finance ready to go? So that when it gets to the day before the auction, they're positive, they're happy, they've had a great experience. If they've had a great experience, I promise you they are going to push themselves on the auction floor more than if they've had a terrible experience. Sure. They don't trust the agent.
Sure, but it can get tough. And I think it depends on the market you're working in. And the biggest challenge for me always is understanding that you're representing one side of a two-party transaction.
Buyers are 50% of the equation.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
To me, a vendor is 100% of the equation because they pay my fee. At the same time, over the course of the last 15 years, there have been casualties of war because of that. It's a tough one to manage. I commend you for doing it. Have you had a tough or a situation whereby you haven't had that outcome and a buyer's had the shits because you've done your job by representing?
Absolutely. And don't get me wrong, when I say buyers are 50% of the equation, I mean in the level of compassion, energy, and attention I give them.
I agree.
The client is my vendor.
For sure.
So making that very clear, my goal always is to achieve them the highest possible result in the quickest possible time, but not sacrificing the result. I want to make sure that I've left no stone unturned, that I know how much, because I've seen it play out, that a buyer's had a great experience. They trust the process because some of these people have never bid at auction before.
Yeah, right.
And if they like you as an agent, yeah, when you go up to them on the auction floor and say, look, we are so close, can you give me another 10 or 20 yeah, or 30?
And they try, you build that rapport.
And they go, okay, you get your Saturdays back. We've been along the journey. And they're like, okay. And then they do it. And I see, unfortunately, still, like, I go to other agents' open homes and the young guy's on the door, he's on his phone. Yeah. They don't ask, how are you? They just say name and number. Yeah. And that's from that first interaction, they're judging whether they like you or not.
Yeah. Man, and where has the level of service gone in Sydney? I mean, you spoke about it, right? You said when you were at Nick's, you like being incentivized by hitting targets. And I think good salespeople are all driven like that. We're all target orientated. You have experience in sales in whatever industry it is in Sydney. And it's so underwhelming, I find, versus, you know, I travel a lot end of the year, mid-year, end of the year, always go to the US. The level of service there is another.
Because they're incentivized.
Because they get paid commission, you know, and it's sad that Australia is that way inclined. And I'm even guilty of it myself. When you're standing at the door, put the phone down. Like if you were to walk into a retail shop or a clothing shop or even like McDonald's or Burger King and the guy at the counter was
on his phone,
it's a problem, right? So, and I think sometimes people can be complacent, but I see exactly what you're saying. What was the circumstance where you did really piss off a buyer and they were like, screw that Astra Jordan, I'm never dealing with her again, but you did right by a vendor?
Selling properties before auction. And that's not because I think my interpretation was that there wasn't anything that I did or didn't do. It was a tricky situation. You know, selling something before auction is
not as
tell
me about it. Give me the details. You can tell straight away our markets are so different because if you ask me for details like that, I can give you 250. But I think it's different because the buyers in my marketplace are wheelers and dealers on another level. You're dealing with the most astute. Like I've said it before and I'll say it again, I'm swimming with the sharks every single day. And so you've got these guys who are trying to secure a property at the lowest number possible. And at the end of the day, I'm not trying to do the wrong thing by anybody, but I've got a job to do for my client. And by all means, I will make sure if it's 10, if it's 20, 30, 40, 50, I'm going to do
You're
it.
You're going to get it done.
I agree with you. It's all in communication. But when you put emotions into the mix and when you put millions and millions of dollars into the mix and you're repping one side of a two-party transaction, it gets challenging.
It does, absolutely. And on that note, you know, you can't, when you're selling a property before auction or even on the auction floor, there's only one person that's going to buy the property. It doesn't matter how great your communication was. So with this particular campaign, I think it was a house in Marrickville, I communicated with all the buyers leading up to it. We had an offer come forward and I was wrapping up the deal. First thing I do is I text all the other contract holders. We have an offer come in. The owners accepted it. Number one, I was saying to everyone that, you know, at that stage, the owner wanted to go to auction, mm-hmm. but someone walked into the office with a contract
and you know the drill, can't control that.
Firstly, I had to deal with everyone feeling like I'd maybe gone against my word. So that trust is already broken.
The trust is broken when you're a real estate agent, all right? So trust is broken long before that, no matter how good you are communicating. And these are the challenges we're faced with.
Absolutely. Right? Absolutely. Called around, gave people the opportunity to put more money on the table. And at that point, I'm, you know, in my head, I'm thinking, okay, I want to make sure I do this the most ethical way possible. So everyone comes in, they drop off their offers. And at that point, I knew that one person coming in after, and I knew they weren't at the same level as the person before. And I called them and I was just straight up with them. And I just said, look, just letting you know that this offer's come in. And they're like, you said I wanted to come in before. Oh, I wish you told me the guide was this and the feedback was this. And I said, look, I'm really sorry if this is not the outcome. There can only be one person that buys the property. I'm really sorry. And at no point did I get upset or raise my voice.
Did you give them a chance to top it?
Yeah, absolutely. I said, do you want to come into the office? And they said, no, this was a waste of my time, basically. And
that's the sort of stuff I'm dealing, which you can never really avoid. But I think ultimately you just remember that you're protecting the vendor.
Absolutely.
And that's what helps you sleep at night.
No regrets. And again, I always have it. I try and do it the most ethical way possible while still trying. If it comes down to it, I'm getting more money for my vendor.
Correct.
That is always the goal. However, your buyers are your future sellers. And that's, I'm constantly thinking.
You never want to fuck anybody over in the process, of course.
No.
What's your routine like, daily schedule? Because it seems like you've got high energy. You're really eloquent, well-spoken. Seems like you work a lot. What sort of hours are you, run me through like a week in the world of AJ?
From the time I leave home, so I'm usually up about 5:36.
Yep.
I am not like you. I cannot train in the morning. I'm not a morning training person. Yep. So I prioritize that after work.
I was not a morning training person. I used to sleep in, a lot of people say that, I used to sleep in till like when I was a kid, 2 o'clock
it's
in the afternoon.
Excuse.
I was like, you know, but I made myself a morning person.
And I have.
It's whatever works for you though.
Absolutely. And yeah. I have been the person in the morning, but my preference, and again, we do what works for us, right?
For sure.
So my preference is getting into the office and all my energy is the tightest it's going to be when I'm on the phones first half of the day. You know, I might go for a walk or something before work, but I'll get up, you know, get ready, grab a coffee, head to work, listen to a podcast, listen to some uplifting music, get to the office and we're on the phones. We make a priority in the morning on the phones. So avoid all appointments if you can. So on the phones from, you know, in blocks from 8 till about 12. And then I'll use some of that time as well to prep for maybe an appointment I've got that afternoon if I haven't had the capacity the day before. I am lucky that I share a business manager with Erkin. So Caroline, she's our business manager and she'll prepare a lot of stuff, but I'm pretty hands-on and she keeps her busy. So if I can, I'm going to do something myself. I'm going to prep something for myself. So I'll do that. And then buyer's appointments, listing appointments, appraisals in the afternoon, open homes as well. Because my demographic, a lot of them are first home buyers, they work all throughout the day. I actually prioritize doing open homes from 5:36, 6:30. So that's a really crucial time. They finish work, they'll get the train or they'll get an Uber or they'll drive to the open home. So again, I'm looking at who is my buyer, what time can they make the open home instead of just booking it at a random time throughout the day.
What time do you get home?
If I don't go to the gym, 7.
And 7:30. What does Saturday hours look like? Start when, finish when?
Start office at 8, first open home I'm doing. I like to do opens at 9 because Erkin starts at 10 and I can take that spot and maybe open something of my own at that time. So because we all need to help each other out. So it just spreads out the day. Finish open homes at maybe 2:33.
And Sunday phone rings, they want you to show a property. Do you pick it up?
That does not happen that much. I'm lucky. It does not happen.
Why not?
Very rarely I'll have people calling me up on a Sunday.
So Sunday's like a day to breathe.
Absolutely. And one thing I do is prioritize that day for my headspace, for all the stuff that I actually find quite cathartic. I clean, I cook, I do my laundry. I do all the stuff that gets me out of the left brain because I'm in that every single day. and I'm just doing the routine stuff, which completely reset my meal prep, resets me for the week.
Yeah.
And that is my day. And if someone said I can do today or Monday for an appointment, I said, great, we'll do Monday.
For sure.
The office, you know, I'll say, look, today's family day. I'm with my family at the moment. Would you be, I always ask the permission, would it be okay?
Yeah,
That keeps me
sane.
Not, yeah, I was going to say sane.
What else keeps you sane?
Gym.
What are Astrid's not negotiables to keep her sanity intact?
On a day-to-day?
On an annual, like are there scheduled holidays? What's your...
Absolutely. So last year, I actually didn't prioritize a break middle of the year because I was busy at that time and I wanted to keep riding through. So I work when I'm busy. I'm not in a position to just pick when I take breaks. If we're not busy, I'll make the most of that. I might take some time off. My mum lives overseas. I try and...
London, right?
Like she's in Virginia in the US.
She was in London? Was she?
We came from there originally. Gotcha. I moved here when I was 8 from the UK, but dad and stepmummy here, mum and stepdad are over there. So I try and get away and see them whenever. I haven't been there in a few years now, but I try and either make some kind of international trip at least once a year. I did Bali last year. I love cooking. Cooking is, if anyone knows me, like food obsessed, I love cooking. I like bring my little creations into the office. Mm-hmm. So that's like my creative outlet. I'm really prioritizing reading because I'm terrible at it. So I've just finished The Mountain Is You by Brianna West. I like reading self-growth books. Yeah. I'm not a story reader. Yeah. And
you want to learn from it. You want to go.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's weird. I kind of feel like it's just a horrible thing to say. Like, and if I'm not learning anything from it, like, why am I reading? Like, I'll just watch Netflix otherwise. But I don't sit and watch TV for too long. I try and have an early bed, see my dad and my stepmom for dinner at least once a week, catch up with my girlfriends. We had a friend's birthday lunch yesterday. They, a lot of women, they're all women in real estate. My close group of girlfriends, right. Kate Smith, who's at Ray White Double Bay. My friend Bianca's just started her own buyer's agency. She's 27. It's turned out that way because obviously our lives are real estate.
You're magneting them.
You're manifesting, putting that energy out there. And they're all incredibly accomplished women in their mid to late 20s and early 30s. And they're the ones that bolster me on the days where I feel a bit, I'm feeling a bit drained today. Kate called me this morning and I'm just like, I'm nervous about the podcast I'm doing today. And
you got nothing. You're just chatting to an old friend.
I know.
Tell me something. So you're not married, but I mean, do you have an intention of getting married and starting a family? Because was when I have asked that question before about women in real estate, what someone said to me was, which again, I thought was interesting, because obviously women birth children and start families, the time that they can actually commit to the practice and to getting good and to building the profile ends up
takes you away from them.
It gets fragmented because, you know, you can do it for X amount of time and not a lot, like we spoke about, are starting young or super young. So they start at a particular age, whatever can happen, has it a child, then it takes them away for a period of time or whatever personality they are. Do you think that, or can you manage it? And is that in the future for you? Or do you just love your work?
I absolutely love my job. I've been pretty transparent with those I'm close to from day one. Like a child isn't something to tick off a list, which I'm not saying that's why people look at it. But if it happens, it happens. If it doesn't, it doesn't. My life will be amazing regardless because I'll make it that way. So if I meet someone and that's like I'm single at the moment. So if I meet someone and that is something that we both want, then that's a whole different thing to if I meet someone and they have children of their own, totally fine with that. Mm-hmm. It's not a bucket list thing. I think it's if it happens, it happens. And sure, I'd love to get married and relationships are amazing. I think one of the things that I've really stood by and a lesson I've been taught through life is always have your own thing. No one's coming to save you. No one's coming to take responsibilities away from you.
Amen.
And I think as women, we make better choices with our relationships when we are secure in ourselves mentally, physically, financially. So that's something I prioritize as well.
Ooh, I love that. Power, power. I got to tell you, I would list with you. I really mean that.
Thank you. I would,
and I don't say that. I would list my property with you.
That means a lot.
Just huge congratulations.
Thank you, Gab.
Let's finish up on what the future holds for AJ. What does it look like? I mean, paint me a picture and what's the target, the goals, and where do you go from here?
Gosh, I mean, it's the goal is within the next few years, have my own team. Whether that is kind of, I love working in the team I'm in and I'm definitely a team person. But for right now, I just want to get better. I just want to, like, I've got a goal of how many listings I want to do this year. I want to keep pushing. I want to make Chairman's Elite.
How many
one
do you
day,
want to do this year?
30.
30 listings
30
this year?
Listings
okay, I'm going to call you at the end of the year.
Yes.
I'm going to check how you went.
Hold me accountable. I want to be better. I want to be happy. I want to be doing the things that, you know, spark me joy. There's nothing I essentially want to change. I just want to be better. that's by myself or with someone else, or hopefully I've also got the same amazing friends around me and I'm working with an incredible group of people. But having a wish list item would be having my own team. I think that would be really cool, and prioritizing taking some big holidays during the year as well, instead of just working through.
You got to manage burnout. Well, look, man, I thank you for your time. I'm going to watch with excitement and tell everyone down at the shop I say hey.
I will do. Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to Thinking Outside the Box with Gavin Rubenstein. Subscribe now for future episodes.